My name is Nancy Gussner. I am an alcoholic. By way of an introduction, my sobriety date is July 28, 1986. It's starting already. My home group is Sunlight of the Spirit group. We meet at 6:30 on Wednesday night in Madison, Wisconsin, at the Plymouth Congregational Church. We are fondly known as SOTS, Sunlight of the Spirit. And we'd like you to join us anytime you're in town. That home group is part of District 20, Area 75, Southern Wisconsin. And I'm glad to see some familiar faces out here. It's pretty daunting when I walked in here and realized that we were in one of these bigger halls. So then I heard Clancy was speaking somewhere else at the same time, and I figured I didn't have to be quite so nervous. He'd draw the big crowd. We have a great panel for you today on building of character. We'd like to open the meeting with a moment of silence, please, and gratitude for AA recoveries of the past 70 years. My job here is just to moderate this thing, keep it moving along and on time, so we're going to get right to it. Our first speaker is James W. from Texas.
Hi, my name is Jim, and I'm an alcoholic. And by the grace of God, I'm following this program the best of my ability, and sometimes that's real good, and sometimes just doing it. I hadn't found it necessary to take a drink to either face life or escape it since February the 6th of 57. There's several things I always like to say in the beginning, because you might get caught up in one of these junk stories or something and forget to say some of the most important things that I really would like to say. And number one is, this program really does work. And the thing is that all the promises, we found 125 or 30 of them in the first 164 pages of the big book, and every one of those have come true over and over again. And I always like to thank my wife, my now wife, wasn't the one I came in with, that didn't stick, but Kathy has been with me now for about 42 years. And one of the reasons that I make such a point of this is, when we first started going together, I was very active in AA then, as I am today. And she was wanting to know when we were going to have more time together. And I told her that AA would always have to come first, because she wouldn't want what she'd be getting if it didn't. And she's honored that all these years, and for that I'm indeed very grateful. The other thing is when I came into this program, I was bankrupt in every way a human can be bankrupt except one. I wasn't bankrupt spiritually, because I didn't have an account at the time. But I want to know you that I have a very active account every day, and I make a lot of deposits and a lot of withdrawals every day. Hopefully we'll be making some of those withdrawals today. The other thing is that I was illiterate when I came here. I graduated from high school, but I couldn't read or write. And I was so ashamed of that for a long time. And I want to talk about that a little more about in my how it was, is because it had a lot to do in influencing my way of needing alcohol. Alcohol was my lover, my mistress, and it did for me what I was not able to do for myself. It would allow me to get along with me, you know. And some of y'all that didn't have the verbal skills when you was growing up knows often it turns into a lot of violence and withdrawals and stuff, and that's part of my story. The other thing is that because I couldn't read or write, I knew, and I still get nervous every time I talk, and I hope I never not get nervous, because to me that would be not caring what anybody thought, and I do care what people think about the way I live my life. And that's part of this character building stuff is I certainly don't mind for people to know how I live my life today. And it's as a result of these steps. But at any rate, I knew that if I was ever going to be able to be really part of this thing, I was going to have to be able to talk before other people. And so at any rate, one night we had a regular meeting, and which meant neither the chairman nor the speaker showed up. And I had my chance to make a good AA talk. And actually, I made the best AA talk that they'd ever heard. And the reason I say that, because these three guys came up to me after the meeting and said that was the best talk we've ever heard. So I got them off in the corner, and I wanted to give them an hour or so more of it, you know. And I started asking, well, what was it, you know, that meant something to you? And they started telling me things that I had never thought of, I never dreamt of, I never said, you know. And the more they talked, the more depressed I got. Because here I'd made the best AA talk anybody heard, and they didn't hear one word that I'd said, you know. So I'm telling you today, if you don't hear the very best AA talk you've ever heard in your life, it's your own fault. Because you're going to hear what you think you hear and not what we say, right? So we're free of y'all that. So anyway, 17,676 days ago, I ended up in an old cheap motel. I had run away from home because my wife was not treating me in a way I thought she ought to. And I had graduated to pints and half pints in. I know some of y'all might have done that. Like, I'm just going to drink this, and that's all I'll drink today, you know, and then, of course, replace it. But when I really needed to pass out, you know, I would buy a fifth to go along with that companion. And I had done that. And the most horrible thing I think can happen to an alcoholic happened to me that night and that day. And that is I couldn't pass out. And I really wanted to. And I couldn't stop caring. You know, one of the reasons I loved alcohol so much that if I drank enough, I didn't cure. Nobody loves you. I don't cure. You're going to die. I don't cure. You're broke. I don't cure. You know, but I couldn't stop caring. And there had been a family doctor that had got, I had burned out everybody in our family. And this family doctor had called me and told me, I don't want to ever treat you. I don't care if you're bleeding to death. I don't want you as a patient with one exception. And that is, if you ever really get serious about not drinking, then I have a plan for you I believe will work. I didn't know it at the time, but there was a guy that had come in from California, and he had the flu or something, and someone recommended that he go see this doctor. And the doctor, he told the doctor, I have to be really careful about what medications I take because it could set up this craving for alcohol. And so the doctor told him, he said, well, I've got a patient. They didn't call us alcoholic. You know, I think that's a very pretty word. It's a lot better than a lousy drunk. Don't y'all think? You know? And anyway, he said, I've got a drunk that won't stay sober, you know. And they talked for hours, and he read the big book. And then that's when he called me, and he knew what to do when that time come. So I want to tell you a little bit, though, about how I got to that motel that day, because everything that happened getting to that motel caused me to get ready for AA. And everything that's happened since then has caused me to have a life that is far more beautiful than anything I could ever imagine. It's truly, I love the word serendipity, because it really has been a journey that I have received so many unexpected gifts that it's far beyond anything I could ever imagine. So what happened, though, when I was in my teens, we had paper riots in route, and we would, one of us get on the beer truck, and the other one would, we'd throw the beer in the in the canvas bags. Then we'd go into the house and smoke cedar bark wrapped in newspaper and drink hot beer. Now, I can tell you right now, I did not have that wonderful feeling people talk about. You know, in fact, the cedar bark was far more dangerous than the alcohol that time, because you took too big a puff, the newspaper would catch on fire, and you'd suck the fire down, you know. I had gotten, like I say, I didn't have any communication skills, and so what happened is I couldn't talk with people. I would get angry, and so what I started to do, I started withdrawing. I was a loner by the time I got in this program, both by request and by my nature, you know. So what happened, though, is by the time I was 17, I went in the Marine Corps when I was 17. Somebody forged my mom and dad's signature and got me in because I was underage. And they told me, you know, they said, well, we're not going to say anything about it because we don't want to get you in trouble. The truth of the matter is they wanted me out of town as much as I thought I did. And I was in the Marine Corps about 30 minutes when I realized I'd made a bad mistake, you know. But it was a little bad. By the time I was 19 years old, I'd already been hospitalized for alcoholism, one directly and one indirectly. One directly is they put me in an old man's ward because I was passing blood in wrong places. And they looked about like I do now, you know, about 110 or something, you know. So. And the other time, though, I say is alcohol-related because I came to in somebody's garage naked in the winter and caught pneumonia. And I always say that's alcohol-related because I rarely ever laid down in anybody's garage naked in the winter, you know. I didn't know who's home, but every time I find an old-timer in AA, I always asked them how old they were and did they ever live in Oceanside. And Cliff Roach did, but it wasn't his house. I was always happy. You know, I was talking about earlier before the meeting. You ever get the feeling that you hope that you're not going to run into that person that you don't want to run into? Well, that's what I... But anyway, I know I had a good time because I never woke up naked anywhere that I didn't have a good time. I just didn't know it a lot of times, you know what I mean? So what happened, I got out of the Marine Corps early and I got called back in. They told me I'd never have to go back in, and Korea started. So I got a letter from our telegram from Truman, our president at the time. And it was a very nice letter, our telegram. I mean, it said something like, we won't be able to win this war without you. And, you know, it was really good. I wish I had saved it because it was made me feel good to think about it. Actually, it was something like report to Camp Joseph H. Pendleton, advanced infantry training. So, anyway, I went over. There was a long story in that I won't go into, but it was rather weird. I came back from Korea a hero. Now, the Marine Corps didn't know anything about that, you know. But the family did, you know what I mean? My family were not religious, but we could make one another feel as guilty as any religious people you ever thought. And so I told them, while I was over there saving their life, you know, in this country and all that sort of stuff, that I should have some kind of special consideration. And my dad and brother were in the car business. So they made me a deal that if I would come to work for them for a year, well, then we'd split everything a third. Well, the way I repaid that kindness is sometimes I'd go to work as early as 10 or 11 o'clock. There was times when I was not drunk during the day. There was times that I didn't produce anything. But there were days I didn't even insult a customer, you know. So I started passing blood again, and what had happened is this doctor told me that if I didn't stop, he was going to put me in a hospital, and I hated the idea of a hospital. I've been in one 6 weeks and one 9 weeks. And so I just did something that's very important for me to remember, is I just quit, and I didn't have any big withdrawals. I just quit. And not long after I quit, like some of us do, I got good. And I met this lady and at this finance company where we was doing business, and I told her about my potential, what I was going to have pretty soon. You notice alcoholics like to talk about potential. I didn't tell her anything about any violence nor drinking because I was not doing it that day, and I didn't think. I gave her all the information she needed to make the right decision. And then we got married, and my dad called me in and fired me. And he told me something that has rang in my ears all these years. And he said, "Son, you are going to have to either work for yourself or by yourself because you just can't get along with people, you know." And that has been one of the most important things as far as the traditions are concerned, you know, is I was able to take these traditions and live them in my day-to-day life as part of my life, and it certainly has made a big difference. But now I'd like to tell you a little bit about, has something to do with character building, because obviously I needed some building of character. But I think one of the most important things to remember that our whole program is equal to or the essence of character building, you know. And the idea, to me, the 12th step really embodies three of the most beautiful spiritual gifts that I can imagine. One is having that spiritual awakening. But the idea, if I don't stay awake, if I don't build a kind of vessel spiritually, mentally, physically, emotionally, and socially that I can live my day-to-day life, then I'm not going to be able to hold on to those gifts. So the idea of working these steps, as far as I'm concerned, whenever I experience any lack or limitation in any area of my life, I go back to the first step, and I treat them just as though it was alcoholism, and it's made a tremendous difference for me. The idea with having a spiritual awakening, to me, I had been asleep most of my life. I really didn't realize there was some kind of power that would do for me what I couldn't do for myself. And, you know, we say in the big book that is really the main object of it, is to find a power that will do for us what we can't do for ourselves. And I had a gift when I came into AA. Well, the day I got out of the hospital, they just sent me to the hospital to detox me. And the day I got out of the hospital, I realized a very horrible thing for a sober person to realize, that I was broke. You know, when you're drinking, you can move things around, you know. And I wasn't able to, I felt so incompetent, and I was in the used car business then. I would actually hide my office to keep from waiting on people. About half the cars I had wouldn't run anyway. And so our Club 12 and Group 12 was just a short distance from my office. And I'd just leave things open, and I'd go down there and I'd sit, you know, and I'd sit there for a while and drink a pot of coffee, smoke a pack of cigarettes, and then go back and try some more, you know. And the thing is, the people that impressed me most in this program were people that said they had found some kind of higher power. And I knew if I could learn how to read, that there was so much tremendous wisdom in our literature, but I needed to do that. So I started reading, and the problem is I never could read by phonics. I had to read by learning words by memory, and it takes a lot of time. But I had a lot of time. I say I went through what I like to call the AA over-honesty. Now, what that is someone coming to my office a lot, and they'd say, "Do you have a nice car we could buy?" And I'd say, "No, I sure don't. You know, I've got this piece of iron over here I really need to sell, and I'm broke. And, you know, I don't know if I was looking for charity," but I knew I was being honest, you know what I mean? But I had a chance to study. Sales were down, you know, and not only were sales down, but I hadn't made a payment in about 3 months on anything, my house, the car lot, or anything. And they was about to pull the string on it. So I had heard and read that He's supposed to raise his son from the dead in 3 days. He ought to be able to take care of some financial problems, you know. So, and I know it sounds, I didn't mean it to be arrogant. It made sense to me. Does it make sense to you? I mean, you ought to be able to do that, you know, because I didn't have that big a financial problem anyway, you know. So anyway, I knew in my heart, and I know that a lot of y'all know the difference too, is it's one thing to know I've surrendered it to God in my head, but when I know in my heart that I truly surrendered it, it's different. It's very different. And I knew for the first time that I had surrendered everything over this higher power. And so what happened is that within 3 days, all those things were taken care of. And they were taken care of in a way that I knew it wasn't me. And I'm so grateful today that I didn't put the limitations on a higher power that say I can only ask God for this, only ask God for that. If God is going to be the source, my only one source of everything, then I can't afford to exclude him from anything, regardless of what it is, you know. Now, of course, I was broke again in about 6 months, but the difference was that I knew for the first time there truly was a power that would do something for a person like me. Not a person that deserved it, not a person that knew how to do things, but a person that just needed it so bad I was willing to ask with all my heart. Do you ever notice when you're working with people in AA, it brings back that memory? Is whenever someone wants this program with all their heart and all their mind and all their soul, they get it. It doesn't make any difference what we say. You know, and it doesn't make any difference if they don't want it, if what we say. I mean, you could quote some of the most beautiful things in the world and they're not going to hear anything, you know. So anyway, that changed my life so completely. The second gift, I believe, is our true nature is love. You know, and one of the, there's two, when I was really getting serious about some inventory work, I looked and found the root of every one of my resentments, and I would charge you to look at the same thing and see if it isn't true. In fact, I usually say that what I'm about to say, if it isn't true, I'll give you 30 minutes to draw a crowd and I'll apologize to you, you know. But to me, the root of the problem is our true nature is love. And when we're not experiencing it, we're not able to give it or receive it, whatever is a source of resentments. The other thing is each one of us is truly created as an individual, which the only thing, to me this means the only way I'll ever be happy is to be the individual I was created as. And to me, I love that saying Michelangelo is supposed to ask, you know, how did you produce such a beautiful creation as David? And he said, I took a rough piece of marble and I chipped away everything that wasn't David. And ever since I've heard that, I thought, what a beautiful way of saying what this program has done for me. It took a rough piece of marble, and it chipped away everything that wasn't my true self and my higher self. I never really wanted to be violent. You know, I never really wanted to hurt people. In fact, I never did hurt anybody unless they deserved it, you know. The problem is often my information was wrong. You know, but my intention was good. You know what I mean? So the idea is the second part of the 12th step is we carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers. You know, what is the message I have to carry today? And I can tell you this, that every area in my life that I have been able to apply these steps with all my heart, mind, and soul, I have had a defect transformed into an asset. And once that transformed into an asset, that's the gift that I must share with others. I need to do it for myself, whether anybody else gets anything out or not. I need to give of those things that have been given to me so they can expand. I mean, look at the idea of alcoholism. Who in the world would ever said, I think what I'll do is become a lousy drunk, you know, and alienate everybody in my life, you know, and hate yourself as well as you think everybody hates you so I can find a higher power. You know, I don't think so. You know, I mean, you don't have to be too sharp to figure that's probably been a better way, but not for me. What it took for me is for me to become what I became and to find a program like Alcoholics Anonymous that could do for me what I couldn't do for myself. And the third gift is learning how to practice these principles in all my affairs and learning how to be that individual I was created to be. And to me, this program offers those opportunities over and over again. I retired from business in 81, and I've had the opportunity to work with an awful lot of people. You know, I keep an office. I say it's good to eat breakfast and dinner at home, but not lunch. You know what I mean? So working with others, I keep an office. And we have workshops and we have meetings and stuff. And it has been so absolutely fulfilling for me. And one of the reasons it's so important for me to work with others is so often I don't even realize I'm off track with something. And I'll see somebody be talking to someone else. And they'll be doing the same thing I'm doing, maybe in a gross form. But then the idea is I can do something about it. In other words, I can recognize to do. I act like sometimes I'm not as sick as they are, which I don't think a sponsor should. Do you? I mean, you should. Sometimes you have to bluff it a little bit. You know what I mean? But at any rate, I have a tremendous abundance in my life today, in every area in my life, spiritually, mentally, physically, emotionally, and socially. And it's all by the grace of God. If I ever give the impression that somewhere or another it's out of something I did myself, and sometimes it seems that way because some of us that are workers, you know, and I am a worker, and that's one of the most beautiful things that I found when I came into AA is I found a group of workers. I mean, we had a little click group, and we went around, and, you know, A really wasn't that big in those days, and whenever a newcomer would come in, they'd become a group project, and it didn't make any difference. You had one day or 5 weeks or whatever, you know, you could at least set up and babysit with them while they detoxed. You know, there wasn't any treatment centers in those days. So it got me started in a way of life that has been so absolutely fulfilling, you know. I was asked one time, what would you do different if you had a chance to do it over? And I would hope the same thing for you, you know. I'd ask more of God. I would ask more of this program. And I'd ask more of myself sooner. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Our next speaker is Delilah F. She's from Ohio.
My name is Delilah, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm really wondering, you know, why am I standing here talking about building character? I got the mail from our GSO office, and I looked at it and had my name on it, and I said, what did I do now? And I guess what that did for me is it took me back in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous in our 12 and 12, and it took me back to the first 164 pages, and it took me back into the 12 and 12, 1 through 12, because I wanted to know about building up character. You know, I want to know where they get that from. Where did it come from? What are they talking about? You know, and of course I went to the dictionary and I looked up, you know, character. And it's a person basically who is supposed to be living moral values. A person of value. You know, a person that's living a good life, that's living the right way that this program has designed us to live. And then I looked up build, you know, and it talked about something that we're constructing for permanent use. And I kept on reading and I found it in step 7. And what it talked about was humility, all through step 7. And it talked about building of character and humility. And it told me before I could address any of the steps that I had to have some degree of humility in order to stay sober. And for some kind of reason, I didn't know that. I didn't know that I had to let go of some of that false pride and that ego to be able to accept and admit that I was an alcoholic and my life was finally And I couldn't beat this thing in my own no kind of way. I had no clue that I had to have some kind of degree of humility in order to be able to go through the process of steps 1 through 12. And again, this program gives me what I couldn't do for myself. You know, I don't ever want to remember what it was like when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is October 28, 1990. But I came here in 87. I came here in 87 with false pride and the ego as big as this room. And you couldn't have told me that I was not okay with self. You couldn't have told me to do absolutely nothing. I came in these rooms and I sat in those seats and I figured if I just sit here, that some kind of way this thing would happen for me. I figured if I hung out with you and you had some sobriety time, that it would rub off on me some kind of way and I would be okay. And how I would not think about asking you for help, not me. So my story is one of full of false pride and full of ego, and I was all messed up in the inside. And I remember a friend of mine gave me my first 12 and 12. And he said, Delilah, you know, you're going to have to address those character defects. And I said, I don't have any. And he looked me dead square in the eye and he said, oh, baby, you really sick. And of course, in my mind, I took his inventory. I had no clue of what he was talking about. But when I finally surrendered to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous 3 years later, and I came here with all that guilt and all that remorse and all that shame, and I was full of despair and I was helpless and I was hopeless, and my back had been against the wall and I didn't have any way out. I couldn't take it no more. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I had committed suicide and it didn't work. So I had exhausted all means possible. And that's when I began to become willing to get some humility in my life and allow you to help me, help me, help me. And that's when I began the process of building character. I found out through incorporating the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the principles and traditions over and over and over and over and over and over again, that I get just a little bit better. Just a little bit better one day at a time. I found out that working with others, that I get just a little bit better one day at a time. And you know, it was so funny because other people can see us better than we can see ourselves. And I was coming to meetings for a long time, and I didn't know that I was whining and complaining. Everybody else knew it, but I didn't know it. And then one day, an old-timer told me, he said, Delilah, I'm so glad that you're not whining and complaining anymore. You know, and I missed it because I didn't even know I was doing it. And the good thing about it was that he never once complained. He always listened. He was always patient. He was always loving. He was always kind. And I remember when I came in here, because when I came in here, I went to meetings and I drank on a regular basis. I came to the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm sure you can see the alcohol coming out of my pores, and you can smell it. My ass was not clear. I'm sure that my head was drunk. I was drunk. And nobody ever said anything negative to me. No one ever looked down on me. They always shook my hand. They always gave me a hug, and they loved me anyhow. And I thank God for that today. I thank God that the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking, and that's it, because I wouldn't have got it. I wouldn't have got it if you would have said, Delilah, come back later on down the road when you got it together. You know, come back when you think that you might want this program. Thank God you didn't tell me that, because I would have died. You know, you allow me to come to meetings every single day with alcohol in me. And not once did anybody ever turn their back on me. You love me anyhow. So when you talked about building of character, I have examples in these rooms all over the world who showed me how to live this way of life, because that's what it's about. How do you live as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in and outside of these rooms? How are you living? What is your moral conduct like? My sponsor said when she thinks about character, she thinks about a person of integrity. Somebody else told me that when they think about a building of character or character, it's about what I'm thinking and what I'm doing when you're not looking, when I'm all by myself. And I thought about that. I could be at the mall, and I could see one of you guys talking to a store clerk who won't do the right thing. And I'm watching, because I'm a newcomer. And I know you in AA. I've been seeing you. How you going to act when you don't know I'm watching? Are you going to give that store clerk a hard time? Are you going to cuss her out? Or are you going to practice some principles in all of your affairs? You know, I remember her driving down the street, and a man cut me off. And I was all by myself. My normal behavior was to teach him some of the sign language. Talk about all his family. Catch up to him because now I'm speed racer. And show him what's really happening. And I was about to go in my regular mode. And the light bulb clicked on. Alcoholics Anonymous jumped in. And I was able, by the time I got to him, I was able to look over at him and just give him a smile. That's what this program has done for me. I have been in situations where my character has been tested many times. But because I live this way of life, to the best of my ability, I do the right thing. Building of character, of course, is a process. It's something that I'm going to be working on, as they tell me, for permanent use. Which means that I have to do the steps, the traditions, all of that good stuff over and over and over again. They say God could and would if he was thought. That means that I don't have the power to remove my defects of character. Only God has the power. But guess what? I got to do some footwork. I got to be willing. I got to be willing to change. I got to be the person that I believe that God wants me to be if I want to stay here and live sober. Because, see, if I don't change, the old me will drink again. The old me will drink again. I know that without a shadow of a doubt. So I suit up and I show up. I attempt to live this way of life, which is a spiritual way of life. And as a result of that, I'm building my character a day at a time. Now, there's all kinds of characters. I was talking to a friend of mine, and I was talking about character traits. And I found out that there's like 49 character traits or qualities. Very interesting. And what I took a look at is pretty much people that know me can kind of predict, you know, how I'm going to act, you know, how I'm going to respond. They can kind of know if you say Jelida, well, you know, she's okay. You know, she's a good person. And that's a far better cry from where I came from. Because before I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you didn't know what you was getting when they said Delilah. You know, I had no integrity. I had no self-esteem. And God only knew what I was going to do because I couldn't. Today, I pretty much know, you know, what I'm going to do in a given situation. There's a lot of guideposts for me because I'm a quick forgetter. I need to write things down. I've been writing and writing and reading and writing, and everything that I probably wrote, I probably forgot. But there's a guidepost that I like to use that kind of keeps me in tune and keep me balanced on how I want to live, how I want to be observed by my fellow man. And I found out this program was designed to get me right with myself first. With a God of my understanding, and then with my fellow man. And as a result of that, I can be a good person. I want to share with you this prayer, and I'm sure you all know it, have heard it, but it is my guidepost that I use to keep me in check, to keep me balanced, to keep me in tune, so I can be a person of good character no matter where you see me at. It's the St. Francis prayer. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, that I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there's discord, that I may bring harmony, that where there's error, that I may bring truth, that where there's doubt, that I may bring faith, that where there's despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, that I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds. It is by forgiving that one is forgiven. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous to be there. And for that, I am responsible. Thank you.
Thank you, Delilah. Our next speaker is Doug L. from Pennsylvania.
Thank you. Wow. I'm Doug L. and I'm an alcoholic. And it's a long time coming. My group is the Old Forge Gratitude Group. We meet on Friday nights. My sobriety date, it's February 18th, 1984. I am happy to spend almost all my 20s, 30s, and going on my 40s in sobriety. What you see here, I thank everybody from the bottom of my heart. You've made me who I am in God's eyes. And that's what building a character is. I like to thank the old-timers, and let's give a good hand for my old-timers that saved me at the earlier times of my sobriety. I owe them everything to be here standing tonight, being asked to be here. One story I have for you that I want to share. I really find this no coincidence. We all have no coincidences. AA here today is, I want to touch on, Jim has so much I can relate with, and also our other speaker, that it's sort of blended into my story, is both everything they touched on. One thing I want to thank, and Jim brought that out, I wanted to make sure and thank a friend of mine. When Bill W. went to Dr. Bob, they developed, and we all know the story, a bond. And the message from Bill was carried to Dr. Bob. I have my Bill W. as a friend of mine here today. When I was 22 years old, I was homeless. I was homeless also in the before the program, and I ended up being homeless also in the program. A friend of mine came, and his age was 22, and he already had 2 years of sobriety. And my friend is here today, 21 years later. He's celebrating 23 years. I'd like to thank Gino for carrying the message. My story is, I was very young. I spent most of my time missing many Christmases and many times. Jim had touched on no education. Still today, I always find myself in the back of my mind when I'm doing business work, or, of course, the promise is a mega story. I have an awful lot of stories of promises for the 21 years of sobriety come true. Promises do come true. I owe this to AA and to my fellow alcoholic to be here today. One of the things that I touch upon for me is he came with the message of hope, and that was my spiritual awakening, was a different type. I was homeless, and many nights my parents, for some unknown reason, would fight, and I was 12 and 13 years old, and I would lay in bed at night, and I hated myself. I had such insecurity, and it seems as though nothing helped. I lived in a small town, Montiel, and nothing helped my insecurities. It seems as though my family, the way I was raised, no sports, no nothing, it just secluded me into my own security more and more. And many nights I would go home at night and lay in bed and feel so like I didn't want to go to school the next day, so different. And I don't know if anyone can relate with feeling so insecure and so different, but I had it in leaps and bounds for me for so long. Many times I wanted to sit with the athletes in school. Most of my drinking was done in high school. You know, I tried to fit in so many places, and I was so insecure that I never liked who I was from the time I started developing in high school. I never wanted to be who I was. I always wanted to be somebody different. I never loved myself, and I knew I had some personal problems in many areas growing up. And when I found alcohol, let me tell you, it was my love that Jim talked about. It made me draw attention. I drank more Southern Comfort and Mad Dog and listened to Led Zeppelin and had blackouts like you would not believe. Mad Dog was cheap. It was Led Zeppelin time, and I would wake up with my ear pierced and things in places you would not believe. I remember in high school, for a joke, I drank a bottle of Southern Comfort and tried to blow up my high school. I made the news then. I'd almost destroyed the bathroom of Lakeland High School. So that was me in a nutshell. No, there was no high school. There was no part of it for me. You know, there was no dreams, no goals for me at the time growing up. And I remember there was this dirt road, and it's the old Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd days for me, you know, and I hung around with older people. You know, my parents ended up getting divorced, and we sold the small. I had horses, and we sold them. I didn't care. We were going to Justice. They knew how to party in Justice on the dirt road. They can get a keg and sit and party for days. That was my friends. I said, Ma, let's pack up and move. Don't worry. Divorce Dad. Let's go to Justice, you know. My mind was on partying and having, but I knew deep down inside, we talk about the core of the insecurity. That was so painful for me that the love for alcohol took that all away from me. And there was a time when I turned 17, I started leaving home and not coming back. And that's when I would stay in people's homes and live on the streets. And I liked that. You know, it became a part of no education. No, there was nothing after that for me. When the alcohol came through, I changed and I became a different person. I slowly not taking care of myself. I slowly was mentioned from Arlene, the speaker last night. She told my story in a way that to get in the rooms quicker, I did intravenous drugs towards the end. And that did certainly change another episode of my life. And for a time there, I would be there would be no problem for me to eat was shoplifting. And for years in the program, I didn't think nothing of it being sober for a while and shoplift. You know, it became a part of my life. You know, so my sponsor said, I don't think you can do that anymore. And, you know, I want to get to the point where my spiritual awakening was in February the 18th, 1984. Well, let me back up prior to that. My dad tried to take me to his house and get me baptized. I was never spiritually, there was no church, no nothing. And my dad took me to a Lutheran church. And for 6 months, I would go to this Lutheran church in the small town of Holly. And we cut us off from my friends. No AA, there wasn't a lot of commercials or nothing then. And my dad said, like, stay away from your friends, stay with me, we'll try to work my dad's program, you know, dad taking me in. So on Easter Sunday, I got baptized Lutheran. He thought, get a little spirituality, a little church for me. And I said to Dad, I know, Dad, I'm getting a job. I like to go downtown and see some of my friends. Well, Dad didn't see me for almost 2.5 years later in treatment. I left and said, I'll see you tomorrow, and I was gone again. And towards the end, my grandmother had come because for me, Christmases wasn't spending time with the family. There was 4 years that I left my family for Christmases and depression started setting in. And I started living out the streets where I would see the homeless people here. We're not all far, and I'm not far from that homeless person. That's me. I'm that close to being there anytime. And my spiritual awakening was Bruce Springsteen living on the street singing Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Bruce Springsteen with that song, Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And friends threw me out. And I called 3 o'clock in the morning my oldest brother and told him that I needed help. It was the first and my biggest spiritual awakening to this program was calling my brother and telling him that I needed help. There was something wrong. And the obsession that they talk about with alcohol is deadly. I always stress this for myself, that I have fear of the obsession. I have fear after and getting sober. If I go into a nightclub or bars, then I show myself I have more power than that alcohol, and I don't. Alcohol has more power than me anytime, and it'll ruin me. And when I got out of treatment, my treatment facility, I had a small one-room apartment. Of course, it had all stolen merchandise. Of course, every day, everyone would live in this house and do drugs and drink. I mean, and my rehab said, don't go back to Oliphant, please, you know. My thinking, when you're first out of rehab, we know how our thinking is. I can do this. Well, there was a period there in my 6 months of my sobriety that in July, there was an arson fire, and I lived on the third floor. And 6 months sober, just getting things together. My family had, you know how they have those issues with you? Are you still doing okay? You know, like that doubt. And I'm like struggling. You know, I don't. And then tragic things would happen. The fire, it made the news media. I was trapped upstairs. You know, the fire from today, from when I looked at it, was so much stolen merchandise and so much bad things in that apartment I went to. Arson, I don't know. There was a lot of bad things that I did to a lot of bad people in my town. And they burnt me down, and I ended up being homeless. And the love for AA, thank God that I was left homeless again, because the love for Alcoholics Anonymous, everyone showed me that I'll never be alone again. From jewelry, to like the clothes to the wear, to silverware, Alcoholics Anonymous, I finally realized through that bad situation that AA, I'll never be alone again the rest of my life. And there was one thing that I always remembered, and later in my story I came back to help out, was the Red Cross and the United Way took me in and gave me a hotel room and gave me vouchers also for clothes and stuff. And later in my story, I wanted to give something back to them that had helped me. But during the course of that time when I moved away, because you know how they say when you're sponsoring somebody or you're telling them about people, places, and things, I kind of learned that the hard way. I think it was time for me to leave Oliphant. I wasn't well-liked no more. I'd done my damage there, and I realized that I moved to a town about 30 miles away, and I'm still there today. But a lot of things happened to me. I was scared. Reality started kicking in of how much damage I did to family, and how much ruins and wreckage that they talk about. And I needed to get right with God and get right with myself. And through the 12 steps of AA, my character building was that I was really learning how to walk in God's eyes. You know, we talk about things about AA and getting better. Here's some of my stories. My first Christmas tree, I went to the PG&W Water Company, me and my friend who's... We became best of friends, and he delivered the message to me at the Salvation Army, Gene, and he wanted to be an amateur boxer. And we became friends, and I had dreams, but never knowing 15 years later, I would be promoting a pay-per-view fight, and Gene was going to be fighting for a world title. Dreams do come true in AA. So during the course of that time when we met and we had these dreams, and he was sharing his, and he had 2 years of sobriety, we became friends, and my first Christmas was I robbed a Christmas tree my first year of sobriety at PG&W Water Company because I couldn't afford one. But it was my tree. I decorated it. It was my first Christmas ever in my life. And I remember on Rocky Glen Road going up and down the street, and I had white lights on it, and it was my first. It was wonderful for me. Does anybody have the feeling that, like, I'm at peace for the first time? I have the love from AA. I have God intervening, and I think at that time in earlier sobriety, I have some old-timers that want to kick my butt. There is a lot of touchy-feely in AA, and I had some old-timers like Philadelphia George who would bang on the table. You've got to change. Change something, Doug, but you need to change. If you're not going to change, you'll never get better in the program and have that link to God, that spiritual link. And today, when I wake up and I open my eyes up in the morning, I do believe that I'm getting, building on character, that I want to walk in God's eyes. And it's taken many a years, because if I have a resentment or I'm not close to God, I don't treat people the day at work. My day is differently. If I'm not spiritually better, I can't handle if my mom's got a problem or personal stuff out. But boy, when I'm on and I'm feeling good, life just seems to roll really good. There is no radar dots that are looking like missiles coming at me, you know. And I, from living on Rocky Glen Road, there was something that I got involved in is we didn't have intergroup in 84 in Scranton. We only had small little districts. And my sponsor came to me. We started the Old Forge Gratitude Group, and we just celebrated our 20th year on Friday night. And I've been active ever since the beginning when we started it. But my sponsor came to me, and he had a set of keys. And we had a small little office in Scranton on South Webster Avenue. And it was our little central office. And he said, Doug, I think you have some enthusiasm and some ideas. It needs to be painted and fixed up. And this is your office for 2 years. It was my big commitment. And it was my big project. You know, it's like getting somebody gave me a car, a white Nova, my third year of sobriety. I didn't get things real quick, no. And I had a checkbook my third year, but the white Nova, when I go to a meeting, the whole window around the front would rain inside as well as out. But you know what? It was given to me, and it was the part of Alcoholics Anonymous people gathered, and really, in this small town, they weren't going to let me go. And I got the keys to the central office. I said, wow, we can paint it. We'll have donuts. We'll open up. We'll have balloons, you know, and we can have guitar players on Friday night, and we can get all the groups to come over and have donuts and see their central office. And that was the beginning till today, my story. I found out that God gave Doug a gift. I love promoting. I'm not good at spelling, but organizing. I organized a little trip here, made some shirts up for this trip, 25 people here. I do it today, you know, and from then on, all my time has been involved in helping promote Alcoholics Anonymous and helping service work, not only that in this rooms, but doing service work for my community. And my whole life involves basically promoting and organizing. I do it today. I kind of do it for a living for 15 years. But that's how he became a boxing promoter, through central office. I found out through central office that Gene had wanted to promote an amateur show, so we had this little town, this little venue called Rocky Glen Park, and I was a nervous wreck. One of my sponsors from New York City, Richard R., who has like 30-some years now, he was an accountant in 1986. I said, could you come out and do the accounting for me? It was only 100 people. But that show and knowing that I made a difference and put something together in my life, that's how I got involved all the way up to the pay-per-view and was involved with Chino. I did my pay-per-view fight in 1994, and that's how it all started with the boxing. I scout fighters out. No one knows that I don't know how to spell. If somebody says, could you write this or letter, I'll always be in the back of my mind, and this is just the truth. I always say, oh, well, could you do it or could you? Because they don't know my real story of how when Bill W. and Dr. Bob got together, this is the result of it. That's how much I worship and help at Alcoholics Anonymous and God in my life, how it has changed me, every part of my life. The other thing is I was talking about the Red Cross and the United Way. And I got active in the homeless in our area, and I wanted to give back to the Red Cross and the homeless. And I think this is what we were talking about today, is outside of the rooms, of how I treat people and how I want to give back a little bit of what God has given me. And one of the things is I wanted to live on a billboard. I came up, I don't know how God intervenes, like either in the shower, he'll come up with this idea, or I'll wake up in the morning, is to live on a billboard to raise money. And I thought, well, I'll get a thermometer and we'll have phones. It'll be in the middle of winter. Well, all of a sudden I see the news media with satellite dishes. And I'm like, this can't be happening. I couldn't believe it. Well, the news media had footage of me interviewing me when I was 6 months sober and had a little bit of hair. Kind of was 80s. The afro. I had very big curly hair and very thin to look a little long. But they interviewed me, and that night they did it on the main news station. The gentleman, Bring Doug Down, was the big billboard. And I had a phone bank with a thermometer. I wanted to raise $5,000. I come out of the tent and plop up another red thing. I got another $1,000. Well, they did a special for Doug. And this is how God, don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle. I would have never had these opportunities. They played the video from 1984 and did me now, and all of a sudden the phones are ringing and I'm exploding with a red marker. I achieved $10,000 for the homeless in Scranton. That's God. I gave back what was given to me. And I'm like coming out of the little tent. And you know, if I drank or picked up, none of that would happen. And this is how close, just last week we booked 25 people for the trip. Only 23 are here. The other two relapsed. And I had to meet them in the parking lot to get their airline tickets back from them. They quit. Paul and Chris quit. They didn't let the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, we're here today. We are miracles. I have no right to be standing here and being asked here. I owe everything to God. My whole being and my building a character is I want to be what God wants Doug to be inside. I want God's character to be inside of me. And it isn't amazing that they bought their tickets and they had so much enthusiasm. What happened? Why did I meet them at Tony's Pizza last Thursday and say, we don't want to go? And then I hear the next day that they're smoking crack cocaine and drinking back out the streets. You know, it scares me because I'm talking to these people that could be me, you know. But I am really thrilled and really asked and glad to be here. And I'm just glad that I got to speak on building character. And Teddy R., I just want to say to my old-timers, there's a few the last couple of years that have been dying very quickly that have helped me in Alcoholics Anonymous. The last 3 years, just about all of the groupies or the old-timers that helped me have passed away. And we have our friend Teddy. I was so worried. He's one of our last of our old-timers in the area. He just celebrated 36 years, and it helped me at the beginning. It's a little bit of a funny story, and I'll end with this because it's hysterical. Because I wonder if you've seen me yesterday, but everything was so nervous because Teddy needs a wheelchair and he can't walk and he has knee replacements. And I made my mind up. I'm a real hyper guy. Like I got to go from here meeting, there meeting, and this time I had to slow down and know that if Teddy walks from here to the curtains, it's a big deal. And I had to keep telling myself that. So I planned the airline tickets, wheelchairs, get everything ready. Well, I come to the convention, I took a cab down special entrance. There's no wheelchairs here. None. You have to call either Red Cross. I said, I have Teddy. We got this far, Teddy. You got to get to see Liz B. Was speaking. And I said, well, I went to the wheelchair company, and I said, we have to get this gentleman there. And they said, we have none. I said, what if you hold my credit card and I'll wheel the empty chair for 20 minutes, take him, sit him in a chair, wheel the chair back. So I was up and down the convention hall with an empty wheelchair, a full wheelchair, just to get Teddy to a meeting. So I'm very much grateful that my buddy, the Mahaf, God bless you, Teddy, and I'm so glad you're here at this convention. Thank you for everybody for being here.
Thanks, Doug. And I'd like to thank all of you for joining us this afternoon. On behalf of the panel, I'd like to say thank you to the audience, please. And one more round of applause for the great panel. I think they like you. Maybe this was the best panel ever. I'd like to close the meeting with a serenity prayer, please. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things